everybody, and welcome to the podcast. Just tidy up my screen here, a wee sec. There we go. Awesome. So, don't need that. Don't need that. Just getting my shit together here. So, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the politics, culture, and some other shit. If you're watching this live, there's not too many watching live. Let's be honest. There's a few. And the video does get some playbacks during the week. But not too many. But it's okay. We shan't fret. But it'd be really nice if you would like it and share it and subscribe to it. And do the wee tick thing. If you're watching on the video, do the tick thing. Apparently that makes a difference to the algorithm. I have no idea. I don't think the algorithm really is going to affect me too much. I'm too small. Therefore, I can get under the cracks in the door and maybe get away with some shit that other people don't. Wouldn't that be nice? But there we go. So listen, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining in. Thanks for all the support and the lovely messages I get during the week. And I do get quite a few of them. And it's great. And I do like it. So if you like what we're doing, what I'm doing here, let me know. Again, pushing forward, I'm going to be getting on more guests as we go forward. The tech issues, you know, I've had tech issues. And but I'm getting, I think I've got on top of it now. I just kind of need to get a bit of confidence up. Because that time I invited Jerry Carroll on from People Before Profit. And I think it was the best one I ever did. And I didn't record his voice. And I was so embarrassed. I'm mortified. Every time I think about it, I cringe. And Jerry was fantastic. And he was so gracious. And I completely fucked it up. And I'm going to take that. Oh, wee message from the Reverend Duffer. Hey, brother. With you tonight. Doing a bit for the planet. Eating meat-free burgers and drinking alcohol-free beer. Well, love it. Listen, man, I can go with all that apart from the alcohol-free beer. I'm not down with that. But if you are, if that's your vibe, that's cool. It's all good. It's all good. The vegan shit. I wish I could get down with that. I've never tried it. Although we don't eat a lot of meat in this house now. We're very good. We don't eat a lot of meat. So, yeah. But it's not the same. It's not the same as being vegan. We do eat yogurts and things like that. So, we're going to talk tonight about... And Rev Duffer there, who popped up in the live chat... By the way, drop in on the live chat. You know, hit us up with a few messages. They're up on my screen. And I'll be able to reply straight back to you. If you want to get a wee conversation going among yourselves, please feel free. Go for it if you want. That would be great. I would love that. Yeah. So we're going to talk about... And it's great that the Rev Duffer has dropped in on this. So we're going to talk about rewilding. And... I'll show you something that Duff sent me a while back and has encouraged me to do. And it's our own little bit, and it's not much. But if we all do a little bit, it all adds up, isn't that the point? So we're told. So, we're going to get on with this. Now, before we hit the meat and potatoes of this podcast, and I've got quite a bit to get through, I have a couple of great videos... for you, and hopefully get it all tied in. Before I get to all of that, let me just give you the updates. So, what are the updates? So, we played a gig last week with the Bonneville. Yeah, so we have a gig on Saturday night. vegan is the way to go and easier than you think, Duff says in the live chat. Reverend Duffer says in the live chat. Absolutely. I'm sure. I keep hearing that. I do keep hearing that. You know, I can see it happening. I really can see it happening. And I would be keen. And everybody in the house would be keen too. But anyway. So, yeah. So we played a gig last week and it was fucking great. It was so great to play a gig. So we've got another one now this week. We've got a name of another one in a couple of weeks as well. So we're playing Stendal Festival on Saturday night. And we're playing 10 o'clock in the Woodland Stage. We've got a special guest coming to join us for a song, which we don't do very often. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm not going to tell you who that is. I'll be a nice little surprise on the night, I hope. What else? Yeah, so we've got that gig. The tickets for Stendal close tonight. So if you're thinking about buying a ticket, I think, as far as I'm aware now, the website kind of shuts that shit down tonight. So if you want to go to Stendal, you should get on that now. And we can't wait for that. Going forward, we've got the Limelight. You see the gig on the screen there. We've got the Limelight in Belfast on the 2nd of December in the Limelight 2. We're working through the special, the guests that are going to play with us. It's kind of sorted now, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And then we've got the Portrush. We're playing Portrush. Oh my God, cannot remember the date. Yes, I can. It's the 28th of August. And we're playing with our buddies and fucking all around proper legends, the Sabrejets. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And then on the 5th of September, we're playing the Cathedral Quarter Arts Festival with Dave Arcari. Dave Arcari's a great guy. A Scottish blues. He plays those gorgeous National Steel guitars. He's very, very heavy. Class. He's playing blues, I'd say, in the spirit that was the way it was played in the 20s when it had to be big and loud and, you know, acoustic. And he's a great friend of ours. We've been playing with him for years. And I'll tell you a great story sometime about the first time we ever met. We played a gig in Glasgow. And I'd sent him a message and said, listen, I knew who he was. He didn't know who we were. And I said, listen, we're playing on the bar around the corner. Well, here. And he says, I just live around the corner. He says, I think I'm doing nothing that night. I'll drop along. And we were playing, and I saw him at the bar, and I went and introduced myself, and he was lovely. And he said, listen, you're more than welcome. Anytime you want, come back to my house. And we drank all the drink we were going to drink in the bar. We got left the bar, and we were still thirsty. And we called in at Dave's house on the way home. he took us in and filled us full of more drink. And it was great crack. And he was lovely. Him and his beautiful wife, Margaret. And they live up in Loch Lomond now. And if you don't know who he is, check him out. He's great content. He's always putting out videos and content. Dave Arcari. Arcari. Dave Arcari. And you get him on Instagram and Facebook. And he's a fantastic... he's a great character, but a great musician, but he's a great character too. So you should follow him. The Northern Ireland Music Prize, my solo album has been, I told you this last week, just tell you again, my solo album is eligible. So I haven't won anything, it just means it's eligible to be considered to be, I think it goes to a long list then, and then it goes shortlist after that, I think, I'm not sure. So that was kind of nice. That kind of tickled me. It got me thinking a bit about my album this week as well, because I haven't really listened to it. I haven't took much, you know, since it's been released. I haven't given it much thought, to be honest. And then I put it up on Facebook and Instagram and whatever, you know. The album has been... It hasn't won anything. It's just eligible to be considered to win something. I know that, and it's not a big deal really, but it just got me thinking. And then I put it up, and then people were sending me messages about how much they loved the album, and it got me thinking about it again, and it was nice. I liked it, enjoyed it, and I haven't listened to it since, so I'm going to have maybe a wee listen to it. Might check it out tonight, stick it on the record player. It'll be a lot of fun. I think I'm very proud of the album, you know what I mean, and very proud of all the music that I make. So yeah, it was good. Now, as far as the Northern Ireland Music Prize goes, I don't know what you do from here on out. But the Bonnevilles have been nominated for the Northern Ireland Music Prize twice in the past, and we were delighted to be nominated. But what do you do? Do I go and lobby people now? Do I go and talk to people? Is there industry things that I have to be getting? Because I don't know if there's something. Is there management then goes and can the record label send emails to the people on the committee? What happens? I have no fucking idea. Or do you just let them get on with it? Because if there's some, I'm not make no bones about it. If I thought that I could win that, I would be delighted. I would be over the moon. I'm not one bit shy about it. And you know, I'm not a particularly commercial person. You know, the album isn't even on Spotify for, you know, moral reasons. And I don't mean to be too. I don't mean to sound like I'm moralizing. It's easy for me to do that because it's my solo album. I recorded it. I owe nobody nothing. It's all me, and I made that choice, inspired as it is by Melodeon, by Stevie Scullion. So, if there's anything I can do, I would like to know if anybody knows anything about this sort of stuff. That would be great. So there's that. Right. And, oh yes, that was the last thing I wanted to update. I'll just check my list here. I want to make sure. Yep. The Boys from County Hell. You know the Bonnevilles, we have a song right at the end of that. We have the closing credits song. And we went to see it in the premiere last week, all that stuff. And it's now in the cinema. So it's in your local Odeon. So you should go and see it. If you can, you should. Please, go and see it for me. If you like comedy horrors or whatever, it's not too horror-y. It's not too gory. It's not like that. It's not one of them. It's not gratuitous, although there's one or two bits, but it is funny, and that's the main thing. And so if you like Shaun of the Dead, it's nothing like Shaun of the Dead, but if you like, it's comedy horror, right? So if you enjoyed that, I think you'll like this. So go and see that. It's in your local Odeon or your local cinema or whatever. Yeah, so that's me up to date. Right, I'm going to put the theme back on. I wanted to do this. This is one wee quick thing before we hit the rewilding and the climate stuff. It's going to get pretty fucking heavy. And I'm going to blast through this because there's a lot. It's about Northern Ireland and the bonfires and all that stuff. And there's a picture on the screen. For those of you that aren't watching this, I'll describe. It's a bonfire of pallets up, I believe it's up in Derry, and it is literally festooned with Ulster flags, Union Jacks. There's an orange flag on top, and someone has put an arrow on it, and I believe this is supposed to be a gravestone. You can't read what it says, if it says anything. We need to stop doing that. It's not me, I'll never do it. Stop fucking doing it, you fucking halfwit. A month ago, the same people that built this bonfire were complaining about loyalists doing pretty much exactly the same thing, but covering it with Sinn Féin election posters and tricolours. Stop doing it. Don't be a fucking... If this is your strategy, I'm begging you, please, stop. This is not a good strategy. This is a bad idea. And I know you don't give a fuck what the gobs on sticks like Jamie Bryson and all those people, the Ironspade, what they think. But don't give them. This is an own goal. Just don't do it. It's daft. We had Fela and Fobel there the other day up in Belfast, and it was fantastic. For the first time in whatever number of years, there was no bonfires, no internment commemorative bonfires in Belfast. The fire brigade wasn't called out. There was no major troubles or nothing big and dangerous and horrible and shameful going on. It's a big, massive concert. Do that. Don't do this. This is shit. So, just... It popped up on my Twitter today, and it's so dumb. It's just dumb as fuck. And we get great mileage of making fun out of certain other people in our society, in our community, being dumb. We're happy to call them dumb. And then you go and do that. Fucking wise up. So. Right. Let's do this. Found this great article during the week. Oh. And I want to say hello to Sarah O'Neill. The artist. She gave me a special mention. And she was interviewed in The Independent, I think it was. Ireland. In Sunday Independent, and she gave me a special mention, but they edited my bloody thing out. But thank you for mentioning it. I really do appreciate that. It thrills me, actually. So thank you for that, sir. I appreciate it. Right, here we go. Let's do this. Where are we? Let me get my little... Where is he? I have that much stuff here. Honest to God, I'm going to have to bang through this. So, rewilding. That's what we're going to talk about. What is rewilding? Well, we're going to talk about that for now, and then we're going to talk about climate. And then we're going to go back to the rewilding. Rewilding is what it sounds like. Putting plants back to where they're supposed to be. Putting nature back to where it's supposed to exist. That includes the animals and the species and the insects and the plants and everything that comes with it. So, found this fantastic article, and it's called titled People Think You're an Idiot, in inverted commas, Death Metal Irish Baron Rewilds His Estate. And there on the screen, again, for the people that are listening to this rather than watching it, there's a picture of a dude that looks like he's just stepped off a motorcycle jacket and beardy and hairy and all that. And behind him is a castle, which is obviously his estate. And he's decided to rewild his estate. Now, let me read you the article. This is fucking brilliant. The cattle and sheep are long gone. So too are the lawns and many of the crops. In their place is a riot of shrubs, flowers and trees, along with insects and creatures that call this fledgling wilderness their home. It is probably Ireland's most ambitious attempt at rewilding on private land, an attempt to recreate a vanishing landscape in a swathe of County Meath, 20 miles northwest of Dublin. Sorry, this is written in The Guardian, by the way, so that's written for a non-Irish audience, obviously. So, that's why they're fucking explaining to us where Meath is. According to the UN, the world needs to rewild and restore an area the size of China to meet commitments on nature and climate. But not everyone applauds Ireland's pioneering effort. You'd be surprised when you live in a castle how many people think you're an idiot, says Plunkett, the 21st Baron of Dunsany. Well, with a name like that, what do you expect? Sorry, not slagging the guy off. He's a fucking brilliant fella. So the 38-year-old who was once a steak-eating, bodybuilding, death metal fan with no interest in land is now vegan. We're talking with Duffer about that. and on an environmental mission. He still loves death metal and sports a ponytail and fake leather jacket. But he decided 7 years ago to turn over 300 hectares of his estate to nature. No livestock, planting, sowing or weeding. Some people considered it disgraceful neglect of an estate associated with agricultural innovation. He said, they just thought I was a complete waster, a decadent fool. One farmer said I should be ashamed of myself for destroying the farm. Plunkett says vindication has come in multiple forms. Before, the estate had just three types of grass. Now it is 23. Didn't even know there was 23 types of grass. In fact, I didn't even know there was three. There you go. That shows you what I know. I didn't do it. The birds did, he said. Trees regenerated and multiplied. Oak, ash, beech, Scots pine and black poplar. I see a lot of saplings growing that I haven't planted. Lush, diverse vegetation attracted butterflies and other insects. It's like a buffet for them, which drew more birds, including rarely seen woodpeckers, barn owls, red kites and sparrowhawks. I heard the call of a corncrake. I had to Google it to know what it was. There have been sightings of snipe and stoats, and an unconfirmed report of red squirrels. Botanists from Trinity College Dublin have started visiting to study the transformation. Last year, Dunsany became the first Irish member of the European Rewilding Network, an advocacy group for wildernesses across Europe. In one striking success, wildcats have returned to Dutch forests after centuries of absence. Ireland has a poor environmental record, despite its green image, and I've always fucking said this. See, if you tour around Europe like I do, and people always go, oh, Ireland is great, this green. Everywhere you go, there are more trees. Everywhere. The farther east you go, it's ridiculous. It's insane. Fucking massive forests. Huge forests. We've nothing by comparison here, or to compare here. So, in the 1980s, it had. We were driving through Croatia once. We were driving into Italy from a gig in Croatia. Honest to fucking God, the forests were mind-bending. They were enormous. The whole country covered in fucking forest. The Basque country covered in forests. The whole fucking place. Despite it being industrial. I think it's because it's so hilly. So the kind of. But anyway, I'm waffling, as I tend to do. In the 1980s, it had more than 500 rivers and lakes with pristine water. Now there are just 20. This is Ireland, by the way. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, there are about 250,000 hectares of wetlands have been lost in the past two decades. Pollution from farming is widely blamed. The state has an ambitious tree planting scheme, but critics say too many new forests are Sitka spruce, which carpet soil with acidic needles and smother wildlife. And that's not a forest, that's a crop. That's a crop. They're just planted to be cut down. We're a fantastic country for remembering our history, he says, and culture, but absolutely terrible at looking after our environment, says Plunkett. The Plunketts are one of Ireland's most storied families. Installed in Dunsany in 1402, their fortunes rose and fell over the centuries. Oliver Plunkett, a Catholic archbishop, was executed in England in 1681 on suspicion of a popish plot. He was canonised in 1975. Horace Plunkett championed rural development and farming innovations in the early 20th century. Other Plunketts were leading figures in politics and arts. So there we go. How fucking fantastic is that? Oh, there's a wee bit more. I thought I was at the end of it there. Randall became the 21st Baron after... I'm not interested in that. He's never been interested in... I've never been a country bumpkin, he says. Uneasy about the climate crisis, at first Plunkett tried converting the estate to organic farming. When concern about the planet turned into alarm, he became vegan and decided to let a chunk of the estate revert to nature. He also resolved to block poachers and horse-mounted hunters. I declared to go to war. Plunkett patrolled the estate's forests and meadows, confronted interlopers, filmed them, summoned police and threatened legal action. I've been threatened in my face and on social media, I've been beaten up, having my tires slashed, you name it. He is bracing for the resumption of hunting season. Come September, all hell breaks loose. Plunkett runs Dunsany on income from the remaining farmland, which is mostly tillage, and from filmmaking. He wrote his first full-length indie feature, The Green Sea, which he wrote and directed, which was released last month. Brilliant, fair play to him. A dark mystery filmed at Dunsany. It tells the story of an American writer who moves to a remote Irish setting and is haunted by characters from her novel. The title came from the landscape around the castle. It's a sea of green. Plunkett, who recently had a baby with his fiancée, allows small groups to visit the castle, but does not want big crowds. Path, signs, a cafe. No, he says. He intends to continue making films. The next is a horror film, and to look over the estate in hope his daughter will eventually take over. In keeping with the family tradition, the vegan baron will not purge inherited furniture, not even the tiger skin rug with head. But will not. All right, okay. I might be the first generation here to bring in IKEA, he says. Right, I don't know what the significance of that is, but there we go. Fair play to him. I think that's fantastic, and I've always said this, and it's one of the things that kind of, it's always one of the questions that I have whenever I see conservation efforts. We need money to do this, we need money to do that, we need to put people here, just leave it alone. It'll return by itself. George Carlin makes a great joke about that. He says, we have the arrogance as humans to say that we're ruining the planet. We're not. We're ruining the planet for us. Life will live on, although what we're doing to it is, it could be fucking getting a bit questionable. But I opened up two articles there when I was reading that, and I'm going to read those later. So what do you think about that? What do you think of that guy? I think that's fantastic. I think that's what we need more of that. And Ireland used to be a temperate rainforest. I don't know if you know this. The whole island was a rainforest. We were like the European rainforest, right? And it got cleared for industry. It got cleared by Oliver Cromwell, for example. It got cleared to create farmland. It got cleared for the wood to make the ships that fueled the empire, the British Empire. So a lot of the wood that the great British Navy was built from Ireland. A lot of areas, for example, here at Loch Ness, where I live, there's a story that 1 mile around the loch, all the way around, was cleared because it gave rebels cover. Because it was all woodland, it was all forested, it gave rebels a lot of cover. Right? You can understand that. So the British cleared a mile around the shore, the whole way around, because the rebels would use the forest to get to the loch, which was a source of food. Yeah? So they didn't have that clearance, didn't have that cover. So there was many reasons for why Ireland was deforested, and none of them were any good. They were all to do with industrialization or colonialism. And I think if you're an Irish nationalist, there's a couple of things you can do. So if you're an Irish nationalist, the big thing is obviously we want a united Ireland, right? But that's a huge thing, and for most of us, that's something that we can't maybe affect. I'm doing it in my own small way with this podcast. That's the whole point of this, is to talk about Ireland and how great it is and to point out its flaws and discuss it in the hope that it contributes in a small way to a new Ireland, a new forward socialist progressive Ireland. But what can we do as individuals? That's to bring the North and the South together, but for us as a people and for our country, what can we do? There's a couple of little things we can do, and I genuinely believe this. We can rewild our own little spaces, right? I have a front garden here, and like you, I have a back garden. The back garden's different. It's got vegetables and fruits and areas there that we play. We knock a hurling ball about, and we don't even mow the grass because it gets used that much. Don't need to. It never grows enough. It always just gets tampered down. But the front is different. And in order just to sort of be a good neighbour or not the whatever, you just mow the fucking grass. And it's an area, let's say, 20 feet by 10 feet. Let's say that's the size of it. And you mow it. And I mow it. And I mow it and mow it and mow it. And it annoys me to mow it. I hate mowing it. It's fucking pointless. But my dad would call around and he'd go, "You're not going to mow that?" And I'm like, "Fuck, sir." Okay. So we mow it. Then, I can't do this anymore. And I can't remember what got me talking to Rev Duffer about this. So Rev Duffer, who we're friends on Instagram and Twitter and whatever, but he's on the chat right now. He says to me, he sends me these photographs. And check out these on the screen. This is his garden. His front garden. Look at that. Look at that. Now, he sent me a video. I couldn't download it from Twitter. Don't know why. Another useful feature from our social media overlords. But look at that there for a great picture. Look at that. Fantastic. And he says it's just a sea of life. Whereas before, it was just a green desert with no life, supporting nothing, completely pointless. And where I picked up on this and where this started, I mean, it always irked me, the idea of mowing the lawn. But we were on holiday and we were in Bulgaria years ago. And we were around a tourist area and whatever it was. But then we went for a walk on the outskirts of the town. We're walking just in the evening. It was lovely. And and all the people's houses, all the local people's houses, the gardens front and back were mini farms. They were just farms. They grew food. And every single house had the pea triangle pyramid things and the fruit trees and cabbages and all sorts of things growing. And it was brilliant. And it impressed the shit out of me. And I thought, look at what we do. Look at what we do. Grow grass and then cut it. And by the way, do you know why we have lawns? Do you know what we're doing? Do you know what this is? This comes from us trying to emulate. So, the English aristocracy. So, the English aristocracy, they invented lawn sports. So, all the things that we know as lawn sports, tennis, golf. Well, that was a Scottish, actually, but you get my point. At croquet and all these, what you call lawn sports. When you're a rich aristocrat, you start to play these games, and especially the women, to keep themselves occupied. So then whenever the middle class is allowed to form and raise up in order to help administer the empire, they have a bit of cash to start buying houses. That's what the middle class is allowed to. The middle class is allowed. It's understood the middle class has to happen. And the good chaps from the lower classes that show themselves to be, you know, good chaps, they're allowed to come up into the managerial class. They buy a house. They're buying houses. No one's ever bought a house before at that level. They're building houses for these people. They put a lawn in. It's just emulating the fancy country houses. And that's what we're doing. And it's fucking pathetic. When you think about it like that, it is pathetic. So do this instead. That's what I'm doing. And Duffer sent me some information about doing this. He says, just let it grow now. And then, he says, you can turn it over at the end of autumn. And then throw all the seeds and all the native seeds down. And then let it sit. And then that's it. And he says that he used to weed it and he used to tend it. And then he just went, oh, fuck it. And he just let it go. And now look at it. Let's look at these again. These three fantastic pictures. This is his garden. He says it is an absolute sea of life. I think that wee bit there has obviously been a wee bit of weeding going on in there maybe. But that there, isn't that fantastic? That's gorgeous. And these are all the things that you have in your own garden. If you look at them, you see dandelions here and there's a poppy there and wee purpley things over there. That's as much as I know about gardening. Wee purpley things and a few grasses and stuff. Fucking, that's what it's supposed to look. That's fantastic. So, to answer the thing that I think that we can all do. So, Duffer, thanks for those. I really appreciate you sending me those pictures. And I really appreciate the information, too, on how to do this. And I'm doing it, by the way, out in my front garden. We haven't cut the grass in a few months now. So, hopefully, it'll be looking much better in a year. But anyway, so what I think we can do, and this is us personally, us as individuals, what I think we can do. An act of decolonialization as a country. Obviously, the big one is to unite the island. But we can advocate for rewilding and planting of trees and reintroduction of native species. I see there was a stork or something? The storks have been born in Ireland for the first time in quite a while, 100 years, 200 years. No problem, brother. Thanks, Duff. Just send me a message there on the YouTubes. Appreciate it. So an act of decolonialization would be to rewild the country, to replant the trees. But a personal act of decolonialization, rewild your garden, your own garden. If you're not much of a gardener, I am not much of a gardener. I do try. I've got a few planty poos and fruit things growing in the garden and all, and I do try, but I'm not great. I'm not the most attentive, but they're there and I make an effort. This is easy. Let's just leave it alone. Just fucking leave it alone and let it grow. A wee act of personal decolonialization. The other thing that I think that we should all be doing, our own personal act of decolonialization, is learn the language, learn Irish. I'm a great advocate for learning Irish. And I think, so those other things are big things. The reunification of the island is a big thing. Planting trees. But we can advocate, we can ask politicians, we can, if we ever get our door knocked, no politician has ever knocked my door, but if we ever get our door knocked, we can ask these questions. Where do they stand on these issues? And these are bigger things that are probably going to be beyond us as individuals. But we're not powerless completely as individuals. Personal acts of decolonialization, let's call it that. Learn the language, rewild your garden. Make it look like what it's supposed to look like. We're putting a blackthorn and a hawthorn in the front garden. And we're hopefully it'll look something like what this looks like on the screen, which is glorious. We've got a couple of little things in there. We have a few daisies and dandelions and all that sort of stuff. But I love that photograph there. It's just beautiful. That just blows me away. I love that so much. So, maybe we can do that. Was that not a good idea? Because not everything, we don't have to go for the big picture all the time. We can go for the small thing. And those are our small personal choices. So, here's an article just on that. Is it this one? There we go. I'm not going to read it all, but the link is under in the video. I've it in already, and it'll be in when the podcast goes up tomorrow. I'll put the link to all this stuff in the podcast notes. I'm not going to read it all because it's fucking massive. It's a huge article. But I read a little bit. And this went out in the BBC this year, 12th of February. Oh, that's my mother's birthday. I didn't even notice that. There we go. So, what would a truly wild Ireland look like? Ireland was once a wilderness of temperate rainforest and pristine bogs where large carnivores and other beasts roamed. What would it take to restore Ireland to its wild state? On a remote patch of land in the southwest of Ireland lies a precious fragment of a lost world, owned and managed by one man. 11 years ago, Owen Dalton sold his farmhouse in Dublin and moved to his new home, an old farm on County Cork's rugged coast. The farm on the Berra Peninsula included a strip of native woodland, something that is now incredibly rare in Ireland, as well as Europe, it says. Isn't that shameful? Dalton saw that the 32-acre patch of ancient trees as his very own temperate rainforest, a type of mossy forest once far more common in Britain and Ireland, made possible in thanks to the moist island air. By pulling out heaps of non-native plants, including rhododendron, which apparently I planted a rhododendron in our front garden, and my cousin Barry was down, and he lives in Galway, the County Galway now. But he was out for a walk, and apparently there's parts of the of Connemara that are fucking ruined with rhododendron, and he was saying about it because it grows low and then it covers the native species that are trying to cling to life, and then kills everything, doesn't let everything else grow. And I planted one a couple of days before it. I immediately went and ripped it up and threw it in the bin. So, by pulling out, back to the article, including rhododendron and erecting a fence to keep sheep and deer from grazing the area, Dalton gave his forest a chance to flourish and expand. Life has, in fact, exploded. In the late spring, the forest becomes a sea of flowers. It's just really beautiful. He calls it an ecological resurgence, explaining that there's been a noticeable increase in the presence of birds and insects too. The picture elsewhere is less leafy. The Republic of Ireland has the lowest forest cover of any country in Europe, but it wasn't always that way. God's sake. Phone, sorry. For an island so often referred to as green, there's a stricken lake of wilderness. Ireland's dearth of biodiversity has long been noted, and it is getting worse. So there we go. Let me just turn my phone down in case it rings again. So there we go. So what do you think of that? That article's huge, by the way. So I would be reading it for 15 minutes if it was to carry on. So if you want to have a read of that, and you should, go and take a wee look. So there's another article there in the Irish Times. And it's a great picture of my favourite creature. The otter, the river dog. There he is. Isn't he class? Big fish in his mouth. And we're in such a... I don't know if you remember, a few months back, I was talking about around here in Lurgan, we've got out the way, we've got Craigavon Lakes, which is like a man-made lakes. And this, like 30 years ago, they put a woodland in around the lakes. And we've all watched it grow up to become, it's not huge big trees, it's smaller trees. There's mountain biking trails going through there, and you go and there's people jog around them. And it's brilliant. It's a proper facility, but it's just there. You don't have to pay for it. And it's just lovely. It's full of animals. And then the lakes has got these fellas in them, the otters. And then the council wanted to, then they developed this big plan to build all the way around shops and houses and hotels and shit, all the way around the lakes, which meant cutting down all the trees and that people had planted. People who volunteered. So they got local people to volunteer to go and plant the trees for the forest. You know, and isn't it an old Chinese saying, you know, the only selfless gift you can give people is to plant a tree, because you'll never get to see it, but your children will. And then they get people to do it, and then 30 years later they say, right, we're going to go and cut them all down. And rightly so, people went fucking nuts. And it didn't happen. And hope it's going to the High Court. And usual council shit ended up with the suggestion of political envelopes changing hands and all this sort of stuff. So this is another great article about the rewilding. But it's just another angle on it, and it's one that I agree with as well. Rewilding many parts of the Irish landscape is not anti-farming and must be factored into national policies. And must be factored into national policies a lot more if the country's climate and biodiversity crisis is to be addressed, and it is a crisis. So there's that article there as well. And it's another good one. And all the links is under this video. Oh, there's Duffer. So Reverend Duffer here on the YouTube video asks yourself, when was the last time your car windscreen was covered in dead insects? That's a lack of biodiversity right there that everyone can see. And I could not agree with you anymore. I say it all the fucking time. And again, as a musician that gets to tour, across the world in some cases, we were driving 2 or 3 years ago. I'll tell you this, and if you don't believe me, ask Chris. We were driving a couple of years ago. We had a very heavy tour. We drove across from Amsterdam all the way across. We ended up as far away as Serbia. And we were going through Slovenia and Slovakia and down at Serbia and Croatia and Italy, all that sort of stuff. So we drove this massive loop. And see, when we were in Spain, I'll never forget, because it was Slovenia and Slovakia and Serbia. It was those countries. You had to stop every half hour to clean your windscreen. I'm not joking. You'd go into the garages and they had a bucket at the petrol pump with a sponge stick thing, like you clean your windows with, to clean your windscreen, to clean the dead insects off your windscreen. And you had to do it. You couldn't see out your fucking windscreen. When was the last time? Correct and proper, Duff. That's exactly the question to ask. When was the last time? Have you noticed? Because I've noticed. I notice it regularly. I say it regularly to anyone that listens. 100%. And there's what we can do. Just show you again. There we go. The beautiful photograph. Reverend Duffer's garden. Rewrite. Just let it go. Let it grow. Leave it alone. It'll take care of itself. You might need a wee poke or a wee prod to help it along its way. Wee pond. I've got a thing for a pond. I've got one of those garden buckets that people use for, you know, with the two handles on the side. I'm turning it into a pond. Apparently it's dead easy to do. You put the pond. My cousin Christina down in County Louth has got the plants for me to go into the water to keep the water from going stagnant. And apparently the frogs will find their way to it. You don't even need to go and get them. Apparently that's how it happens. Everything I can see, that's what everybody's saying. And I'm going to end up with a lovely front garden like this. Because I'm sick of looking at that fucking thing as it sits. It's a waste. So that's what we can do as individuals. We can pressure our politicians, of course, and this is what we're, you know, if you're watching this podcast, you're obviously politically motivated and you're politically active and engaged, and you're probably a leftist and you're probably an environmentalist, so probably talking to the converted already. So we can do, but these are the personal things that we can do. And Duffer there is correct. Veganism's probably a part of the solution. But beyond that, the likes of this is definitely a part of the solution. So I hope to be able to share a photograph, something similar to that, with you a year from now. So why are we here talking about this? But before we get on, right, we're going to move on. Subject, I'm going to hit the theme tune. Da-ba-da-ba-da. There we go, it's going to come in. And I'm going to show you my lovely nails. What do you think of my nails? For those of you that aren't watching this, I'm describing, I've got silver nails on my right hand with a lightning bolt on my middle finger. Yeah. My daughter Lily did that last night and I forgot to take them off today. She was bored as we were watching television together. She says, can I do your nails? I said, yes, you can. So there you go. Right. So, rewilding, please do that. And the Irish language, that's the thing. If we could do that. If everybody turned their front garden into that and spoke, started to learn Irish, I think we'd be in a fucking better place. A wee personal act of decolonialisation, that's the way you think of it. So, why did we get the rewilding? Well, I found that article, of course. Right? So, I don't know if you're aware, but in a few weeks, well, a month, 31st of October, show you it on the screen, pop it up. There we go. COP26. COP26 is the UN Climate Change Conference. And this year, the UK, 2021, have control of it. They're hosting it, whatever it is. And it goes from the 31st of October to the 12th of November. And this is the UN. And there was one, the article I was reading you earlier on was talking about the UN. The UN has released a climate change report this past few weeks. And it's fucking devastating. It's entitled Humanity is in the red zone or something like that. The name of it has escaped me. But I'm going to play you this video. Right? Now, this is from well, it says in the video. Let me just get that there. So, Sir Patrick Vallance. So, let's do this. Sir Patrick Vallance's video. There we go.
The IPCC report makes sobering reading. It's very clear human influence on climate is certain. Extreme weather events are occurring all over the world, wildfires, floods, sea levels are rising, and there's an increasing focus on potential tipping points as things that really send us in a very bad direction. But 1.5 degrees C limiting of global warming is possible, but action is needed now. We shouldn't dream there's a magic bullet that's going to come and save us. Most of the technologies are there or we can see them. And the challenge is making sure that they are deployed at scale and we understand how to do that. These decisions and the research needed needs to occur now. We need to reduce our energy consumption at the same time. And we need to view this as a whole systems problem. What happens in one part affects another part. So very urgent scientific R&D and engineering need in the next few years in order to get these technologies in place, deployed at scale to try to make us reach that target as soon as we possibly can. And at the same time, continue to invest in the science that's going to come up with the new solutions for the long term, which we will require even beyond 2050. This is a moment for action.
So, what you heard there Well, Sir Patrick Vallance, talk about the climate change issue. He doesn't mention pollution, doesn't mention our personal consumption, doesn't mention capitalism, doesn't mention any of these things. And what does he mention? Technical solutions. We're going to build our way out of this. And if you remember a few weeks back, that fucking greedy psycho asshole Jeff Bezos and his flying dick went into space and he come back and he said, we're doing this in order to, you know, eventually all heavy industry is going to find itself, it's going to be off planet. And this is a part of the process of developing the technology to make that happen. Now, that is fantasy. By the time this stuff happens, the planet is going to be on fire. I'm sure you've seen it this week. I've seen it. Turkey is on fire. 27 firefighters in Turkey died this week. 27 soldiers. Turkish soldiers, I believe. Died fighting fires. Greece is on fire. The extremes in weather in this country, Ireland, which Ireland is a moderate as far as weather go. It never gets too cold and it never gets too hot. It never gets too wet and it never gets too dry. This past 2 months, it's been fucking raining all the time, or you can hardly breathe with the heat. It was 32 degrees, which for certain parts of the world isn't very warm at all. But for here, that's hot. Hot. Properly hot. In Armagh City, just 10 miles from my house, from here, it's 32 degrees at the weather station there. We don't have time to wait to develop the technology. Carbon capture technology for sure. But unless you're having the conversation about consumption and about production and about capitalism, then you're not serious. Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk and other celebrity billionaires are talking about colonizing Mars. We have a perfectly good planet here that we don't need to provide it with some atmosphere engine, like out of a sci-fi movie, like something out of Star Trek. We're going to some atmosphere engine and create this world. It doesn't exist. It's never going to exist. But if it ever does happen, unless we fix this planet here, we'll never get, we won't exist as a species long enough to develop that technology to re-engineer other planets. Now, so, Sir Patrick Vallance, I don't know who he is. He's obviously a part of the British establishment. He's called Sir. As far as I'm concerned, a shameful title. But this is the website. Right? So you can see on the screen there, there's the website. That's live, that's me scrolling down the screen. You can see it moving on the screen, that's me scrolling. And I was scanning through the website. I didn't have time to go through the whole thing because it's going to be dense as fuck. And I have another video or two I want to show you. This was not the focus of what I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to bring up the UN climate change report. And I'm scrolling down through the website. That's where I got the Patrick Vallance video. And it's all very lovely. Very, very nice. And then you get to the bottom. And you get to this bit. And you can see it there. And I screenshotted it. And I'll make it a little bigger. Because it's rather small. On the UN Climate Change Conference website, with thanks to our principal partners, Sky, Fair enough, I think. I don't know. I mean, I know that Sky used to be owned by Rupert Murdoch, didn't it? But they sort of put their money where their mouth is when it comes to certainly talking about the environment. I know they spot the Sky Cycling, the cycling team, they went all green towards the end when they were sponsoring British Cycling and stuff. Down here with Microsoft. Microsoft, who are one of the biggest computing companies in the world, obviously, along with the Googles and the Apples and the Samsungs and all that, who are currently got a shit ton of US government contracts to make VR glasses for American soldiers so that they can control remote control weaponry. Very, very green. Scottish Power here, with a nice little green background, as the greenwashing of it. The biggest one that I can remember recently, although it's not on here, was the BP logo, remember, when it went to a little sunflower? It was fucking, I couldn't believe it. 6 months after they had sunk a fucking oil tanker off the coast of Alaska, full of oil. SSE, don't know what that is. Let me just click it and see. Energy supplier. Who's SSE? Energy supplier. Oh, okay. Electricity. Yeah, okay. So, Sainsbury's, Racket, I don't know what that is. Not West Group, bank, obviously. But the two that stood out to me, and I couldn't believe my fucking eyes when I seen it, was Unilever and GSK. GSK is the acronym for GlaxoSmithKline. These are two of the worst polluting corporations on the planet. And I mean like of, I don't mean of the top 100, I mean of the top fucking five. These two are it. They own everything. In fact, let me just see if I can pull up. Brands Unilever own. Brands Unilever own. Let's do this real time. I should have done this earlier, but like I said, I was... There's Unilever. And there's two little infographics. Unilever, let's see. You could prove me wrong here, but this is... I'm not going to be proven wrong because I know I'm right. Unilever. Ben and Jerry's, Cornetto, Knorr, Skippy, Lipton, Coleman's, Bovril, so those foodie things. Comfort, the VO5, Sunsilk, Alberto, shampoo, all different types of shampoo, all sorts of things. Trinus, oh, right there. There's it there. So Unilever, headquarters in London, owns 105 brands. Dove, Vaseline, Simple, Clear, Pond, Synthetic, these are just the ones I can recognise. Lipton, PGT, they own tea, Sif, Surf, various ice cream brands, etc., etc., right? So that's that. So they're huge. And these companies, I mean, that you go anywhere in the world, you get those brands. That's why a lot of supermarket shelves all over the world all look the same, because of companies like this. And they take no responsibility for the manufacture, for the environment, or for the disposal of their packaging, or for the manufacture of the contents of their packaging. If they can get away with dumping it into rivers, they do it. No, they don't. Yes, they fucking do. I'll show you that in a minute. Not particularly Unilever, but they're all as bad as each other. And don't tell me they're not, because they fucking are. What was the other brand? GSK. Brand, I'll do it too. Right. Brands owned by GSK. This is just a Google image search, by the way. So there we go. GSK. Horlicks. Sensodyne toothpaste. Tums. Polygrip. For dentures. I don't have to worry about that yet, thank God. So, there we go. Another horrible, polluting corporation. Pfizer. Does Glaxo own Pfizer? That's actually somebody's asking the question. Advil. So they seem to own Nicorette. They seem to own a lot of all that sort of stuff, right? These are polluters, right? And where did I find this? On the fucking UN climate change website. On their website, thanks to our principal partners. So this is, you say, well, what harm is it if they want to sponsor the website? Maybe they are trying to change. Any changes are purely cosmetic. To fortunate turn of phrase there, but purely cosmetic. And they're purely in order to do what you call greenwashing. Okay? So how do we know that? Because that's what all these companies do. It's what they've done since forever. I'm going to show you a video. You won't fucking believe it. I'm going to show you two videos, right? So the first one is about a man called Stephen Donziger. So I just want to get these things up properly in order.
So just remind us finally, how shocking were Chevron's...
So this guy is called Stephen Donziger. I'm going to read this. This is from Democracy Now!, their website. Protests across the US are calling for immediate release of an environmental and human rights lawyer, Stephen Donziger, who's been held under house arrest in New York for 2 years after being targeted by the oil giant Chevron. Donziger sued the oil giant in Ecuador on behalf of the 30 million Amazonian indigenous people for dumping 16 billion gallons of oil into their ancestral lands. Donziger's going to explain exactly what that means in a second. I'm going to play this video for you. It's only short. Ecuador's Supreme Court ordered Chevron to pay $18 billion a decade ago. A major victory for the environment, corporate accountability. But Chevron refused to pay or clean up the land and instead launched a legal attack targeting Donziger in the United States. A federal judge in July found Donziger guilty of 6 counts of criminal contempt of court after he refused to turn over his computer and cell phone. In an unusual legal twist, the judge appointed a private law firm with ties to Chevron to prosecute Donziger. The judge herself has ties to Chevron, it turns out. After federal prosecutors declined to bring charges, this is a broader threat to our society, and we cannot allow any rule of law country or any country private prosecutions run by corporations, which is exactly what this is, right? So, to surmise, Donziger is a human rights and environmental lawyer. He represents the native Amazonians, indigenous Amazonians, to sue Chevron for dumping 16 billion gallons of oil into their ancestral lands. And by the way, this has really fucked them up. They were living as green a life as possible. They were living in the jungles. They can't do that now. Now they're getting sick and all sorts of things. Ecuador, Chevron agree to... They're getting sued. They agree to have the court case in Ecuador, and they agree to obey by any judicial rulings, and it ruled $18 billion a decade ago was the price they had to pay for the cleanup, and they refused to pay it. They then chased Donziger back to New York. He's been on house arrest for 2 years in what is essentially a private corporation bringing a human rights lawyer and activist to court. This is the federal system refused to try him. So this little clip I'm going to play you is from the George Galloway show at the weekend. So there was an appeal went through last week, and it failed. Donziger, it failed. So he's it looks like he's going to end up spending 6 months in jail. But he's been in under house arrest for 2 years. I would just take the 6 months to fuck him, but done with. So he's on the George Galloway show on Sunday night, and this interview is quite good. If you want to go and check it out, it's all on YouTube. The entire George Galloway show's on YouTube. This interview with Donziger kicks in about halfway through it. It's about 10 minutes. I just snipped this 3 minute bit out. When George asks him, what did Chevron do? He said, just real quick, tell me what the impact of what they've done. So check it out.
Just remind us finally, how shocking were Chevron's crimes in Ecuador?
Probably the worst oil-related disaster in the history of the planet. They deliberately dumped 16 billion gallons of cancer-causing toxic oil waste into rivers and streams that were relied on by indigenous groups in the Amazon for their drinking water, for their fishing, for their bathing, for their sustenance.
And you can see it right there. That's Ecuador on the screen for the people not listening. I'm describing a river, a piece of land, and one of them oil pump derrick things on fire. And it's just an accident waiting to fucking happen. But this is what's shocking about it. There was no accident. It was done on purpose.
They polluted the air. They polluted the food supply. And these are indigenous groups that for millennia had lived prosperously in the rainforest with no money. I mean, they had everything they wanted or needed, including medicines and shelter and food and fish and, you know, clean water, clean air. And in a few short years, Chevron, through its predecessor company, Texaco, went in and poisoned the whole area. It's a 1,500 square mile area. I emphasize this was not an accident. This was not like what BP did in the United States in the Gulf of Mexico. This was by deliberate design. This was a production system designed to pollute, to save $3 a barrel. And the people paying the price are the five indigenous nations who are barely hanging on and are facing extinction because they can no longer be supported by the forest in their traditional way of life, because the forest has been deliberately poisoned by Chevron. You know, having been held accountable in a court of law, by the way, the case was held in Ecuador at Chevron's request. They insisted the case be in Ecuador. They promised to comply with any adverse judgment. But once we got the judgment, they're like, oh, we're not paying. You know, we're going to, and they threatened the indigenous people with a lifetime of litigation unless they gave up on the case. And then there was an internal email we found. We're like, oh, our new defense strategy is to demonize Donziger, meaning me. They never want to talk about the merits of what they did. They never want to talk about the environmental crimes they committed, the mass industrial size poisoning of the rainforest by literally dumping 4 million gallons a day of scalding oil wastewater into rivers and streams with no warning to the people. They lied. The Chevron engineers lied to the indigenous leaders, saying that oil was like milk. It had vitamins. I mean, the level of abuse, George, is shocking. I mean, I know there's a lot of abusive behavior in the fossil fuel industry in Nigeria and many countries. But I have talked to a lot of oil workers who worked in dozens of countries around the world, and they say they have never seen anything as bad as what Chevron did in Ecuador.
It belongs in the drawer marked unbelievable. I found it difficult after our first interview to understand how this can be allowed to happen. I must say I feel even more so now. Stephen, the best of luck. When will we hear about the next appeal?
Yeah, I'll keep you posted. If people want to keep up with the case, follow me on Twitter at S. Donziger or on Instagram, Stephen Donziger. The other thing is we have a website, DonzigerDefense.com, D-O-N-Z-I-G-E-R, defense.com. Sign up, you'll get our email newsletter. And if you want to help financially, we have a defense fund. It does take resources to fight this monster. And if you can help, please do. But come anyway to the site, even if you can't, sign up and get involved. We're building a campaign out of this.
Now, are we spelling...
So there you go. And it's, as I let that play on, because if you want to find out more about it, go and visit his website. He's basically being hounded. And the point of this is just to discourage anyone from considering doing the same thing in future. And they're getting away with it. And it's becoming, you know, the idea that we live in a democracy we're a rule of law supersedes anyone's personal power, like a king, is bullshit. It is fucking bullshit. And I know this is in America. Julian Assange is in Belmarsh prison in England. He hasn't done anything wrong. All the witnesses that come forward that accuse him of these alleged sex crimes have all reversed their statements. One of them, it's recently been revealed that he was, or she was, a serial liar, and I think mentally unwell. But I won't talk any more about that, because I'm not 100%. But I know that I'm believing in the Julian Assange thing. But so the idea that, you know, that we're any better, and then that we can then use these our massive armies and to go and colonize and steal and other people's stuff is fucking laughable, and it's hypocrisy of the highest order. So I'm going to play you, I wonder, should I do want to play you this. There's one more little video after this. I'm going to play it. It's about 10 minutes long. We're just going to let it play it through, but it's entertaining, so it's good. And it's about Exxon. So, but it's the same thing. Massive pollutant, getting up to no good. Share of shitheads. So I'll play you this little video of Ash Sarker. She was on, she got interviewed, and she was on one of them BBC shows that I don't watch. And I think the guy's called Mike Graham or someone like that, another right-wing dude. He's doing what Ash Sarker says is good, but the person to watch is the other guy and the strategy. And it's the strategy of the big tobacco from the 50s. I've spoke about this before in this podcast. You don't have to prove shit. All you have to do is what? Introduce doubt. And that's what they've been doing. Tobacco's been doing it for 50 years, 60 years. Climate deniers, these huge corporations have been doing it. So watch this. I'm only going to play a little minute.
On Monday, the IPCC released its latest report into the catastrophic consequences of climate change and the urgent action we need to take to stop it. This would have been an obvious opportunity for mainstream channels to invite on climate scientists to talk about their findings, to talk about what we should be demanding our governments do. Instead, the Jeremy Vine Show on Channel 5 invited on Mike Parry. He's a former journalist at The Sun and The Express. More recently, a host at the Murdoch-owned Talk Radio.
Sorry, Mike Parry, I don't know what name it, Mike Graham, just some random English gammon that I don't know. Let's carry on.
We can look now at this non-expert's response to the report. This report was by hundreds of the world's leading climate scientists, by the way. We'll also see a response from my colleague, Ash Sarkar.
It's all very well us doing our bit, but we're responsible for 1% of the world's emissions, okay? But Russia, China, India are all actually stepping up their emissions by using more fossil fuels. China have just discovered in Inner Mongolia, which is why they're so horrible to the Mongol people, billions of tons more of coal, and they're going to use it. They're opening a new coal-fired power station about once a month somewhere in China. Now, I know you can say, well, OK, but we're still going to do our bit. But are we putting enough pressure, and will we at the COP26, on other nations, massive nations, using all these fossil fuels to do their bit? Because if we're doing our bit, but it's so tiny compared to the rest, it's pointless.
So there's no point in us because we're so small.
I'm sorry, but that is a load of fraff. One of the things that Britain can do is introduce legislation tomorrow which would stop British banks from financing fossil fuel projects.
They're not going to do that.
So while you're right, We have been decreasing our emissions, but there are still plans for new oil and gas fields in the UK.
Yes, this is
the controversy around Cambo, just off the coast of Scotland.
Yes.
You've also got these plans for a new coal mine in the northeast.
Yep.
This is suicidal of the government. It's absolutely suicidal. And it also doesn't... Wait, hang on. I'll let you have a go.
Sure.
Right. It also doesn't make economic sense. All right. You're going to have to shut these things down if we want to manage global temperature changes to within a reasonable level. What the report says today is that we are at code red for humanity. It's going to be 1.5 degree increase in temperature by 2030. We're at 1.2 now, and we're already seeing fires across Greece and Turkey, fires in Italy, flooding in Germany.
But
think about what it's going to cost if we don't take action, Mike.
But these are all models. This is not fact yet. What you're doing is predictions.
This is fact, because what we can see now...
Do you see what he's doing there? Do you see what... but these are just... And then he goes, he said, listen, I'm not a climate denier, but these are just... You fucking sound like one. You fucking sound like one. And I don't want to sound alarmist, but we are code red. We are in code red for humanity. We're code red for the fucking planet. And that the BBC, Jeremy Vine show, would allow this fuck... This asshole who's going... And you say, well, he's just a commentator, so they brought on a commentator to argue against them. Yeah, but the commentator that's arguing against them has got the vast majority of world climate scientists in her corner. Who's he got in his corner? Well, I'll show you. Fucking Exxon and Chevron. We're going to hear no more from him. I only wanted to show you that. And if you listen to these programs, and these radio shows or these television programs or whatever, and increasingly podcasts and things, that guy represents what big tobacco started. They started this process back in the 50s. Cigarettes cause cancer. All you have to do is get one doctor to say, no, it doesn't. And that's it. And that's what he's doing. He's that guy. He's just introducing doubt. You don't need to prove anything. All you have to do is introduce doubt. These models don't... We can't... China's to fuck up. If China's not doing it, us not doing it is not a reason for doing... is not a reason for anything. That is the logic of the playground. That's what a child says. They're not doing it, why should I? And as Ash Sarker pointed out there, it's not economically... If you're a capitalist, which he is... It doesn't make economic sense, because you're going to have to reverse all this shit at some point anyway. All the fracking in America has been shown to be economically unsound. The coal mining, economically unsound. We talked about this last week. We mention it all the time when it comes to economics. We talk about the externalities, the price of the cleanup, which does have to happen. You can't continually pump shit into rivers and into forests and not clean it up. The people in Ecuador are going to have to clean that up. That's going to have to be cleaned up. And it's going to have to be priced in. But currently it's not priced into the product. The cleanup isn't priced in. There's only so much pollution we can do before we have to start pricing it in. And we're there. We're there now. So it's economically unviable to continue with the traditional carbon heavy industries. So this last video, I know this one's going long tonight, I'm really sorry. But this is a 10-minuter. But that's us done. Once this is... We're going to finish this. So here we go. This is entertaining, though. It is good. The guy... It's from Climate. Alex... It's a video from... Where the fuck is it? I want to give them their credit. Climate Town. It's from an organization called Climate Town. So here we go. Let's do this.
Well, it's time to crack open a cold one and then pour a little out for the end of an era here at ExxonMobil. That's right, for 30 years, Exxon has been accused of funding disinformation campaigns and paying off politicians and lying about climate change. And for 30 years, they've had one response. It wasn't me. It's the classic Shaggy defense, and it's...
Deny it. Create doubt. Wait till you see what these fuckers have been up to.
It's been incredibly effective for Exxon because all of their senior leadership has stuck to the wasn't me strategy, and their army of lawyers and money has been able to use this blanket denial to fight off any legal challenges. Until June of 2021, when ExxonMobil was, to borrow a phrase from Shaggy, caught butt naked banging on the bathroom floor in an undercover sting operation by Greenpeace activists. Greenpeace contacted ExxonMobil's senior director of federal relations, a man named Keith McCoy, and pretended to be from a Middle Eastern oil company PR firm that wanted to hire McCoy for a cushy new job. But first, they wanted to know how in the heck Exxon was able to avoid accountability for all of their actions. And Keith McCoy, in full HD, confessed to like 8 different cartoon villain-level evil plots that ExxonMobil had spearheaded to delay action on climate change. 30 years of wasn't me's up in smoke in a single Zoom call.
Did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yes. Carbon tax isn't going to happen, but it gives us a talking point that we can say, well, what is ExxonMobil for? Well, we're for a carbon tax. They start talking about how this is an ExxonMobil chemical and ExxonMobil is poisoning our waterways. We need Congressman so-and-so to introduce this bill. We need him to make a floor statement. We need him to send a letter. Yeah. You name it. We'd ask for everything.
Keith McCoy spent the better part of an hour speed confessing, so there's a lot to unpack, and I urge you to check out the many stories that actual good journalists have written. Links in the description. But for me, there were 3 specific turbo confessions that I think were particularly important. These are my confessions. Right out of the gates, if you ever find yourself using the term shadow group to describe your business associates, you're probably not the good guys.
Did we join some of these shadow groups to work against some of the early efforts? Yes, that's true. Did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yeah. Yes. You know, we were looking out for our investments. We were looking out for our shareholders.
In this context, a shadow group is when you or someone you know sets up a separate group that you then fund to promote fake or misleading scientific conclusions that support your preferred conclusion. Shadow groups are basically how people catfished each other before Facebook. And Keith McCoy just admitted that Exxon used shadow groups to trick people into thinking climate change was fake so they could keep making their insane profits. And that's especially Cruella de Vil-style fucked when you consider the fact that Exxon has known climate change is real for over 40 years, as demonstrated from internal documentation going back to July of 1977, where Exxon scientist Dr. James Black held an internal meeting explicitly warning the top executives about it. I made a whole video about this, and you can watch it on my channel if you fucking feel like it, but the TLDR is that in the 90s, Exxon switched to a deny and delay strategy, not unlike Big Tobacco. Oh, fun fact. No, not fun, but fact. Okay. ExxonMobil actually used some of the same exact experts that Big Tobacco used when they tried to convince people that smoking cigarettes didn't give you cancer, even though they had a mountain of evidence that said it super did. You ever seen The Matrix?
Yeah.
Deja vu.
Have you ever seen The Matrix?
No, wait, which one is The Matrix? Whoopi Goldberg and she can see ghosts, right? And if you want an independent explanation of what a shadow group is, feel free to visit www.shadowgroupexplanation.definitelynotclimatetownrelated.com. And while you're at it, consider subscribing to me on Patreon, a thing that will not give you cancer. Wait. These are my
confessions. Carbon tax isn't going to happen, but it gives us a talking point that we can say, well, what is ExxonMobil for? Well, we're for a carbon tax.
The senior director of federal policy admits on camera that they only support a carbon tax because they know it won't pass and they can use their fake support of it as a talking point.
Oh my God! He admitted it!
Actually, do we have a Shaggy reference we can use here? She even told me on camera.
What's it mean?
They even got him on camera. Thank you, Shaggy. Anyway, a carbon tax is actually a very effective way to fight climate change. It's basically a pollution tax that says let's charge companies a fee for every ton of carbon dioxide pollution they emit. Companies will be incentivized to reduce their own carbon emissions to reduce the fees they pay, and we can let the precious free market solve the problem. Countries like England and Sweden already have a carbon tax, and guess what? It actually works. So when a bunch of big oil companies like Exxon started promoting a carbon tax in recent years, it turned a lot of heads. Maybe these big oil companies aren't trying to delay climate change and are ready to help tackle the problem, a thing they explicitly state on their websites. It turns out none of that's true. Apparently, ExxonMobil just did the math and found out that in today's political climate, there's no way to get 60 senators, including 10 Republicans, to vote in favor of actual climate policy. But you don't have to take my word for it. Take it away, Senior Director of Federal Relations at ExxonMobil.
It's going to take political courage, political will, in order to get something done. And that doesn't exist in politics. It just doesn't.
It's basically never going to happen, right? Is the calculation?
No, it's not. It's not going to. Carbon tax isn't going to happen.
And they've been running this carbon tax.
This is lobbying. In America, it exists in a place called, the main place is called K Street, which is where the lobbyists live. That's their fucking headquarters. Lobbying is bribery. Across the world, that's what lobbying is. We've just made it legal, and we do it nice and politely through this system called lobbying. And instead of it being called bribery, we call it lobbying. And the corporations get what they want. The politicians get paid. In the UK, they don't get paid directly so much, but they do tend to get, after they come out of office, especially if there's someone like David Cameron, who was revealed this week, 2 years after he left office, made $10 million in a part-time gig for some fucking American oil company. Lobbying.
Hustle. For over a decade. Here's former CEO and former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, remember that? Talking about the carbon tax back in 2009.
A revenue neutral carbon tax, though, has the advantage of being well focused for achieving our society's shared goals of reducing emissions over the long term. Carbon tax, 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 carbon tax. Now, some people have suggested that a revenue carbon tax has no chance of gaining sufficient support in Congress to become a law. I disagree with this assessment.
Carbon tax isn't going to happen. It's an easy talking point.
So since the carbon tax was the only climate policy ExxonMobil would get behind, and a lie detector test determined that was a lie, Exxon probably shouldn't be trusted when it comes to the current climate policy legislation being debated, aka the third confession. These are my confessions. If you spent much time in America, you'll notice that our infrastructure doesn't hold up to extreme weather. Or mild weather. Or no weather. And there's this huge infrastructure package going through Congress right now that would help rebuild America in a more resilient way, create a ton of jobs, and help a ton of people. But it would require a bunch of multi-billion dollar corporations to actually pay their taxes. And that's where Exxon draws the line.
We're playing defense because President Biden's talking about this big infrastructure package, and he's going to pay for it by increasing corporate taxes.
And their strategy is to go after the more vulnerable senators, both Democratic and Republican. A vulnerable senator is someone who's up for re-election and would maybe lose that race if Exxon decided to fund their competition. You know what? Keith McCoy actually describes this a lot better. Do we have footage of that?
On the Democrat side, we look for the moderates on these issues. So it's the Manchins, it's the Sinemas, it's the Testers. Bill Manchin, I talk to his office every week. He is the kingmaker on this because he's a Democrat from West Virginia, which is a very conservative state, who's up for re-election in 2022. That's Hassan, that's Kelly. I can't worry about the 2027 class because they're not focused on re-election. The 2022 class is focused on re-election, so I know I have them. Those are the Marco Rubios, those are the Senator Kennedys, those are the Senator Daines. So you can have those conversations with them because they're a captive audience. They know.
So there you go. I'm gonna pull that now. You can go and watch the rest of that online. On Climate Town is the name of the people that do that video. It's really good. It gets into American politics a wee bit. it gets into the weeds there. So that's why I pulled that right now. But it's no different anywhere else. It's the same concept. We know from the Al Jazeera undercover video they did on the Israeli lobby that how aggressive and filthy rotten the lobbying industry, and it is an industry, is in the UK. And there's no reason to suspect this any different anywhere else. In Dublin, we know what them fuckers are getting up to. Another scandal there last week. So go and watch that. The video, the original video which this is taken from, the sting operation, was by Greenpeace. And it's online too, uncut. The whole uncut thing is all online. There's also a good video from Channel 4. They do one in the UK. They do a little breakdown of this as well, with a little bit of added extra footage and stuff. So you should go and check that out. The point, don't forget the point of me showing you this. The Chevron Corporation created the massive oil spill in Ecuador. They won't pay. They've captured the judiciary in America, so much so that they can use a private corporation to using private lawyers to a judge whose connections to Chevron are highly dubious, to force the lawyer that successfully sued them in Ecuador to be forced into house arrest for 2 years. They then argue everything against the climate denial. Everything against they go down the climate denial route. When they don't go down the climate denial route, they say they claim ignorance. When they don't go down the claim ignorance route, they do what? They fucking sponsor the UN climate change website. These corporations. Can you dig what I'm saying? So then when they can't do that, or when they and they do all these things together, then they get their gobshites to go on the TV and introduce doubt. What's the point when China's opening a coal mine a week or a month or whatever it is? What's the point when everybody in the developing world wants access to the products of the Western world? What's the point? Introducing doubt. Smoking doesn't give you cancer, one doctor says. That's what this is. And we're just slow rolling ourselves to destruction here when we know what's fucking obvious. It's obvious what the answers are. It's obvious what the solutions are. When the head, Patrick Vallance, Sir Patrick Vallance, the head of the government's climate committee, talks about technological solutions to climate change on the official UN climate change website and doesn't mention once capitalism, consumption, eternal consumption on a finite planet. You know these people are full of shit and they are the problem. They are the problem. As our friend Reverend Duffer says, use your own eyes. The climate is changing. If the climate scientists of the world were saying, by their hundreds in their but in like 96% of them, 97%, whatever it is, listen, this is just a cycle that the planet goes through. I would say, well, that's just a planet, the thing that the planet goes through. It's unfortunate, it's a wee bit weird that it goes up, it goes down, it gets hot, it gets cold, it gets wet, it gets dry. This place is on fire, that place not on fire. It wasn't on fire before, but it's on fire now. Climate scientists all over the planet are saying, no, don't worry about it. If that was the case, well, that's what I would be. I would be going with that. I wouldn't be going with the 1% that are saying, no, fuck. If I look out my window and I know, as the Reverend Duffer says, you just need to know from driving down the street. There are no insects anymore. No insects hit your windscreen. Our garden, real lack of insects this year, and a noticeable drop in insect life in our garden. This, and it hasn't changed much. I know it's just circumstantial. It's just me looking out the window. But there you go. So, let's end it. Let's end this thing. This thing. Just so you know I'm serious. There we go. Listen, thanks everybody for listening. The podcast is doing really well. The numbers on the YouTube are okay. There's not too many, really, to be fair. But the podcast numbers are doing really well. Every week, it's more and more and more. I'm going to start bringing in more guests, as I said at the start. I just need to get a wee bit of confidence that the technology is going to work. I'm still mortified with the Jerry Carroll one. Didn't happen. Didn't work out. So, yeah. I'm going to start doing all that more and more. Like, share, subscribe, please. Tell your buddies, tell your friends. Rewild your garden. What does that mean? Just let it grow, baby. Let it grow. Do nothing. Just let it grow. Throw a load of fucking seeds, that wildflower, native wildflower seeds, of which you can get a bag full for pennies. And just wait. And it's going to be gorgeous. And just let it grow. And your own personal act of decolonialization. Learn a bit of Irish and rewild your front garden. Is that alright? Does that sound like a thing? I think that sounds like a thing. Okay. Like, share, subscribe, everybody. Please tell your friends. Help spread the news. And see you next week. Toodle-pip.